4,000 people converge on the New Hampshire Capitol to protest a budget they call unfair.
It's drastic. We're being scapegoated because they need a target.
And immoral.
It's a moral concern. The poor and the vulnerable take priority in any society.
The House passed a $10.2 billion spending plan Thursday that's significantly smaller than the governor's plan and stands to cripple the state employees union.
I think the budget goes too far. I think the policies reach far beyond what they need to reach.
The most controversial amendment would make state workers at-will employees at the end of their current contracts. The union's collective bargaining rights are lost if new deals are not in place by that deadline.
At midnight, on a given date, the contract will expire with all the terms and conditions and benefits associated with it. What are the firefighters and police supposed to do at 1201? Go home?
I want my money.
The budget also draws ire from mental health workers and advocates for the elderly and disabled for its cuts to services and changes to Medicaid.
She wants to be funded. She wants to have the supports that she needs to have a quality of life. She's been waiting. It's okay.
Inside the State House, the gallery was cleared and closed to the public for several hours after an outburst from firefighters who'd come inside to watch the debate.
They kicked us out and we left, and we're not leaving now. We're going to stand here all day.
They were let back in to see the budget pass, 243 to 124. Republican leaders say it's a measure that's balanced and fair to all.
The best welfare for the people of New Hampshire is a private sector job. And we have to return those jobs to New Hampshire.
The budget now heads to the Senate, where not one legislator, Republican or Democrat, has said they will support the bill, especially the amendment on collective bargaining. A fight is in store for this budget. In Concord, New Hampshire, Lauren Collins, NACN.
Hi, everybody. This is Brett. Today is June 29th, 2011. And before I go any further, I want to say I'm sorry if there's any popping. I don't have my pop guard handy. It is packed away with some of my Pork Fest supplies. I am yet to uncover it, but this won't be a problem in the future. I'll find that little thing and put it back in front of my microphone so you don't have to listen to pee sounds pop. So, back in March, I think the third or fourth week in March, a group of us were up in Concord to protest the conviction of Bernard von Nothaus. Bernard was the creator of the Liberty Dollar, and on March 18th, he was convicted on various charges, including counterfeiting, which was an interesting one because his Liberty Dollar in no way resembled legal tender in the United States. I actually have the Wikipedia page open here because I wanted to make sure I had my facts straight, and I'm just reading a couple of quotes from the district attorney where the case was prosecuted in North Carolina. She's called von Nothaus's activities a unique form of domestic terrorism to undermine the legitimate currency of this country. And then later went on to say, well, these forms of anti-government activities do not involve violence, like all government activities. They are every bit as insidious and represent a clear and present danger to the economic stability of this country. Unquote, newsflash right there, this country is apparently economically stable. So, a group of us were up there, and the civil disobedience was people were going to exchange Liberty Dollar certificates or actual Liberty Dollars for other goods. After about 45 minutes to an hour, somebody came up, somebody else from Manchester, and said that there was actually a teacher protest going on at the Capitol building. Concord is New Hampshire's capital. That is 5 or 6 blocks away. So a few of us decided to take a walk over there. I, of course, was very interested in seeing if I could engage a teacher in some discussion to get them to answer some of the questions that I had also, at this time, just posted on Facebook in the pro-union Wisconsin groups, for which I was pretty much attacked and threatened and ridiculed and all other kinds of unfortunate things. So I was excited. I heard that there was a pretty large-sized group of people over there, so Jason Talley agreed to come along with me, Jason from Talley TV and the CD Evolution Fund. So he brought two of his cameras, and we went over there to record. When I got there, there was only one teacher remaining, and she walked up to us because we were holding signs from the other events. I think she initially assumed that we were part of the teacher protest. And when we told her that we were not protesting in favor of the unions, I asked her what they were there protesting, and I think she said, I think they're trying to do something with our health care. So she wasn't too sure why she was there, but, you know, she was a very pleasant woman, and I admire her courage to stand there, basically surrounded by, you know, people like me and Jason Talley and a few others, and engage in some conversation about this issue. And I, to be honest, I really fell for her. I mean, this is the mother of three, and a lot of these young teachers are really just as much dupes as a lot of the kids are of this system and the unions. So she was promised things. I mean, she took that job with certain expectations, and now some of those things are threatened because just of the recklessness of the spending and the greed of the unions. And I tried to sympathize a little bit, and I think the discussion went pretty well. I just grabbed the video from Jason when we ran into each other at Porkfest, and it took a little bit of work on the audio. There are two different recordings. One, the first 10 minutes, he's using a camera that has a little bit of a stronger microphone. The second one, the audio of this woman and myself was drowned out by a significant background noise, so I had to work on cleaning that up as much as I could. The sound quality of this show is not really great, but this is kind of a novelty for me because I've been working on getting a teacher's voice, active public school teacher's voice on this show for, I don't know, like 22 months. So I hope you enjoy it. We're going to call this Teachers Unions 103. A lot of the issues we discussed were covered in the first two installments of the Teachers Union series. And I think I can let this play straight through really without any commentary from me. We've talked quite a bit about logical fallacies in recent shows. You're going to hear a number of them from her. Why don't you see if you can spot them? But I could have done a better job as well. I certainly could have done a better job clarifying my definition of education. I think that would have helped the conversation. And I think I might have come on a little bit strong, too. But remember, this is after all of this, these attacks had just taken place on Facebook when I tried to ask people in Wisconsin protesting for the public unions some simple questions about what they were doing and why. So I might have been a little bit overzealous. And, you know, if I got another chance to do this, I would certainly learn from the mistakes that I made this time. But that's about it. So, all right, bye.
'Cause when things go wrong with you, it hurts me.
Public education position in general. That's certainly not anti-education. And when I tried to talk to people online, they just said, well, you're anti-education. This was people in Wisconsin, so they're like, oh, you're pro-Walker. I'm certainly not pro-Walker. And I believe that all he's really trying to do is hurt the way that his opponents raise money, because the unions support his opponents. So the issue for me is, why should public employees be unionized at all? Like, I understand.
If you are, how do you propose that children get educated? Because New Hampshire is trying to pass, well, some people are trying to pass a law that children don't have to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine what New Hampshire would be like if children are not required to be educated?
No, there's a difference between not going to school and not being educated. There are millions of children in this country who've never set foot inside any kind of compulsory, organized, institutional schooling who are more educated than most of the kids who spend 12 years in those places.
Do you think that the majority of parents in this state would educate their children at home? I am not opposed to homeschooling.
Well, okay, yeah, but why if there was a law that was passed, or a law was, there's a law that kids have to go to school. You're not making a law that says kids don't have to go to school, right?
Parents don't have to send their kids to school, and truancy laws cannot be enforced.
Okay, so that's repealing something that already exists. That's taking away laws. It's not adding new laws. Right? So I'm generally in favor of taking laws away.
Okay,
but,
so you are saying it's okay that children might not have to, parents might not have to send their children to school.
I know, that's absolutely okay. But I mean,
if they choose not to homeschool them, And with no child left behind, every child in this country is supposed to be reading and writing
at
100% efficiency.
100% efficiency. That sounds
efficiency.
What does that mean? Isn't that different for everybody?
Well, it is, but not according to the federal government.
That's like saying that's. But what does that mean? Not according to the federal government. When was the last time any of those people worked with kids? When was the last time they said they put in a classroom?
Exactly.
So, I work in private education, right?
Clearly.
So I was working at a school in Hooksett called the Scholars Academy. It was just a little tiny school for gifted kids, and I wound up working with one kid as a tutor one-on-one, right? And when kids get to be like a teenager and they're used to this kind of like sit still, be quiet, do what you're told kind of routine.
Well, I disagree with that kind of routine.
I totally disagree with that kind of routine too, and I think it's absolutely soul crushing. But I think
I do as well.
I think that even though people like you have good intentions, clearly, never dispute that people who work in education have good intentions. The routine, that environment, kind of, you know, beats that conformity and obedience into them a little bit, and they learn how to, you know, bottle up emotions and, like, not be able to express their frustrations.
I think that's a generalization.
Well, of course it's a generalization, but would you say it's true some of the time? Some of them, certainly, right?
Some of the time, it's not true. Some of the time for the children.
So what I realized is by working at this school, working with, like, a group of kids, they all work at different paces. They all have different strengths. They all have different weaknesses. We're talking about six kids.
Are you talking your private school or
private school.
Public school? Because it's the same way in public school. In public school, everybody gets to come in. There's no turning anyone away. I have children that walk in not knowing what a letter is, not knowing, I teach kindergarten, not knowing how to hold a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have children who walk in reading. I teach each child where they are. And I try to get the children who don't know how to hold a pencil up to grade level. I have to try to make up 3 to 4 years of lost educational opportunities.
And that sounds like hard work. And from my experience working with younger kids, that is really hard work. And they're all in different places. So why should people in Washington, D.C., who haven't set foot in a public school classroom in 25 years, be telling you how to do your job?
I don't know. I don't know why they do that. Because in private schools, those kids aren't allowed in. In the private schools in my area, if they're not reading by the end of kindergarten, they can't go to first grade.
That should certainly be a choice of private school who they want to.
Well, it is, but that's why private schools who aren't required to meet the requirements that public schools need to, they can turn everyone away. So where do these kids go if public education is abolished? No private schools accept them, and they have nowhere to go.
I think that the fear that a lot of people have is they picture, when we talk about, you know, being against compulsory institutionalized schooling, that we want to like pull a lever or flip a switch that immediately eliminates all of these opportunities. Because right now, I mean, kids need to go to school for no other reason than their parents. They need some place to be while their parents work. And unfortunately,
it's their parents work.
Yeah, and that's become one of the things that I think keeps it going. But what we're talking about really is a gradual transition where there is more options. Is that
to phase out public education and have millions of children uneducated? Because
that doesn't mean
I have parents that don't send their kids to school now.
Right. Well, right now we have nationwide compulsory education, and we have millions of children who are uneducated.
Yes.
So, when I see something like just being in the private sector, right, or running a business or working for a business, government is the only place where people say that thing doesn't work or isn't working or isn't efficient. How can we make it cost more and how can we make it larger? Anywhere else, they say that thing is not efficient and it doesn't work. How can we replace it with something that does?
Because corporations and public schools should pick and choose who walks in the door. Public schools don't.
Mm-hmm.
Private schools don't have to have children with emotional disabilities, social disabilities, learning disabilities, physical disabilities. They don't have to take them. How many kids with autism and Asperger's and mental retardation are in private schools.
There are some private schools that are entirely for that population.
Yes, designed for that population.
Mm-hmm.
In your school, where do you teach, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't teach in a school anymore. I work as a private tutor. So I teach...
In your private school, how many kids were there with autism? How many kids who were nonverbal could not communicate verbally?
I worked... The last organized school that I worked in was in Vermont. I left there in 2006. The entire population was learning disabled or either had emotional or behavioral problems.
And was it a school designed for that, or was it atypical?
Yeah. Okay. Because
so
in the private
sector,
but they understand that things need to be specialized, right? Like, we wouldn't make a computer or a website and claim that it was good for everybody.
Yes, but you were talking about getting rid of public schools. So are you wanting
but not with the
schools?
Not with the dramatic dropping of the lever.
No matter how you do it.
Yeah.
What about the parents that can't afford private schools? Because it kind of sounds like segregation. You have an emotional disability, you go here. If you have autism, you go here. If you have a learning disability, you go here. If you fall into the norm, you can go here. Is
public
that
schools the same way, though. Like, if you're 6, you go here. If you're 7, you go here. If you're 8, you go here. So
they're multi-age classrooms.
Oh, that's great. I hope that trend continues. But I mean,
well, not if you phase out public school.
Well, every private school that I've ever worked in had multi-age classrooms. Where
I've never heard of it.
Where older kids could actually mentor younger kids, and it was good for everybody, instead of segregating people into these groups. I agree that's wrong. I agree that that's wrong. And that's not what I'm talking about. But what we're talking about is gradually getting the government out of education. Like, when this, like, today we say, how could we ever live without it? Right? How could we ever live without public school? I guarantee you, in 10 years from now, if No Child Left Behind still exists and people talk about repealing it, they will say, how could we ever imagine education without No Child Left Behind? But you remember 10 years ago when Bush implemented, people thought it was insane. Right? But then, but a generation goes by and it becomes normalized, and they say we could never live without it. But it will become normalized if it stays. When public education, government-run education, was instituted in this country over 100 years ago, people were up in arms about it. They said, you're going to turn the education of our children over to the government? People thought that idea was insane. And it's certainly the first move of any totalitarian society, any society that wants to move their people away from freedom. They want the people in power to control.
Now, there's a little bit of a cut right here. I think this is where Jason was changing from one camera to another because the battery died.
No, we don't oppose education.
To have privatized education is to deny a child the right to inadequate education.
In theory, public school is saying that everybody has a right to an education. But today, if you look at the reality, not everybody is getting that education. And you also have the question,
why are they not getting that education?
Well, there's two arguments there. Some people would say that the system doesn't work and it's not efficient, and some people would go as far as say that the goal of that system is not education. The goal of that system is putting people into a mold so they all pretty much come out the same. So they're obedient and predictable, and they conform to the expectations of the people who are going to rule.
See, I guess I disagree with that. In my district, you know, they're working, in lots of districts, they are working with companies and corporations to see what they're looking for. So to help prepare high school students for such things. I mean,
corporations are dying.
Is it to have children graduating if they're going to walk out and not be able to do anything?
That wouldn't be good. But isn't that the case today with a lot of kids?
I think some kids. I don't think a lot. I think you are generalizing, and I don't think it's fair. I mean,
I didn't bring my statistics, but what Jason said, I think we would agree about the importance of education, and I think if we looked at your career and my career, we both probably worked hard, you know, towards that goal. It's just different ideas about how to do it. And these ideas that we're talking about are so foreign to most people and so petrifying.
I don't think they're petrifying. I just don't think they're fair. I think every child deserves the right to an education. I think by privatizing it, you will have people who cannot afford an education, and that's not fair.
Well, okay, so...
what are they going to do? If they start, you either pay for education now, or you pay for welfare for the rest of their lives. And You pay now or you pay later.
So you're saying if we don't have this system, these people are going to wind up on welfare?
No, if they're not educated. If you deny children education because they can't afford it. Private schools, like we talked about, can turn anyone away.
Mm-hmm.
So what about the kids that get turned away? Where do they go?
That's what we need to try and fill in the alternatives. We need to create alternatives, and that's why we're not talking about flipping the switch. We're talking about a gradual transition. I am not in favor of anything that is going to be implemented tomorrow that isolates or hurts the people who have become most dependent on this system. But what we want is, like, usually if you look at how other societies have worked in the past, the Soviet Union, Germany, they
have worked. They've fallen apart.
This is what they did. They sucked everybody underneath the state as dependents, and then it collapsed on top. Right. So all we're talking about in education and economics and politics is trying to get people out from underneath, out from dependence, and that's a gradual process. But we all become, even if we make it our whole lives without being dependent on a state. Once we turn 65, they say, okay, well, we'll pay for your retirement and your health care. So we all become dependents. We all get sucked into that, and that's why it's so hard for people to let go of these ideas. But
they don't pay well, and they're getting rid of it.
Which system are you talking about?
The Social Security.
Yeah, you and
it's
I.
It's not going to be there.
You look close to my age, and you and I are probably not going to get that.
Right. I pay a lot of money to whatever you want.
Which is, like, basically a Ponzi scheme. Right. If you're being told you're going to get something out of it, and you're paying into it, and that money is just being paid out to somebody else who's retiring now, that's what Bernie Madoff did. So
no, we're being told we're not going to get it.
Oh, they are. They are telling you that now.
They're telling us that there's not going to be anything, which I translate into you're not going to get it if there's nothing there.
But that's the government system. That's how they all usually end. They get bigger, and they get bigger, and they get bigger, and then they collapse. And, when so many people are dependent on a system like education, I'd hate to see it go the same way. So all we're trying to do with outreach is let people know that there are already alternatives. I mean, you've heard of things like Khan Academy. Khan Academy is an online school. This guy just started making, like, math YouTube videos for his cousins who he was tutoring.
That's great for the people who have access to the internet. What about the kids? Lived, like, in a transient town?
All the kids that I used to work with that I started my career with,
in
Washington, D.C., Baltimore.
The parents had to pay for them to go?
No. These kids, they came from the state. And if we think that the state cares for people, you should see how these kids come into this school and they're just loaded up on drugs, right? Because do you want to get into what it's like to be in care of the state, what the state does to poor people? Like, I understand that...
I work with...
Right,
I mean,
we always say, like, we want to think that all these things are good, that it's helping the poor, but if you look at how predatory some of the state's programs are on the poor, it's absolutely sickening, and that's where I started to really wake up.
Well, back to education.
Sure.
I can't remember what
we were. Yeah, we went all over the place.
We did.
Trust me, I've been trying to have one conversation like this for like 6 weeks, so I'm a little worked up. But I think you and I would agree on a lot. But when all of this political mess gets mixed in, where we're taught to, like, divide into this side and that side, and, you're this and I'm this, so we should be fighting, we kind of miss what the real problem is. You know what I mean?
I think we should be fighting. I think we...
No, but that's what we're
disagree.
Taught.
Disagree. I mean, on some issues, I'm sure we agree on some, but I still believe every child has the right to an education, and that includes the children with no food, no water, no electricity, who don't have access to the internet, whose parents don't have $10,000 to $15,000 to send them to a private school.
Right. Well, I certainly have a desire to see every child get an education. But when we start talking about people having rights at other people's expense, where does that come from? And if you look at the society we live in today, where all these people work and pay taxes, and then people come in and shovel $700 billion of that off the top and give it to Wall Street, having a system where people believe that some people are entitled to other things at other people's expenses is always going to wind up being controlled by the worst, most predatory and greedy people. Mm-hmm. As long as that gun is there for somebody to grab, the most powerful and most connected people are always going to grab it, and they're always going to have it. And people are going to run around saying, what about the poor? What about the roads? What about the children? But all of the money goes up to the most greedy and predatory people all the time in every system like that. So that's why we don't want to scramble around for the gun. We want to get rid of the gun. We want to put the gun away everywhere. And that is, you know, people being forced to supposedly pay for these rights that other people have at somebody else's expense. That's not something that I believe in. Do I want to see every child be educated? Absolutely. Absolutely.
So how, who then, you know, if it's not collected?
What's the, what's your, you work in New Hampshire, right? Would you say the average tuition of a student is 1 year in public school in New Hampshire?
In my district, it's $13,000 for each child.
$13,000 for an elementary child for 180 days. Does that seem high?
Well, for the private school, it's $10,000. Well, for one of them. Then the other one across the border, is $18,000.
But let's deal with the private school in your area that you said was $10,000. I mean, there's probably good Phillips Andover, Phillips Exeter, $25,000, right? Because when you're paying for the name of the school. So $13,000 per kid at the elementary level for 180 days. 10 years ago, it was half that. 20 years ago.
Price of gas.
You know, 20 years ago, it was a quarter of that.
I mean, I remember when gas was 97 cents a gallon.
Mm-hmm. But I could show you a chart of, like, if this is the XY, and we do cost of education and quality of education, the chart goes like this. Right, where the cost is going up like this, and the quality, as far as by the school's own metrics, test scores, is going straight across. So more money hasn't solved the problem. And like, all we can do when we're talking about affording education today is deal within this paradigm that we know, where it costs $13,000 to a year to educate an elementary school.
Look at the cost of living. It didn't go like this. If you're paying 98 cents for a gallon of oil, you know, 20 years ago, and now you're paying $4.50, electricity goes up, oil goes up, food goes up.
Right. What I'm saying is,
salaries go up.
So you're talking about inflation, basically. So if you look at the cost of living raises of everything else, they increase consistent to each other. There's two aberrations. Do you know what they are? Education, healthcare. The two things that the government has the most control over in this country. So, there's, you know, like I understand the, I don't want to say it's a fear, but the concern, and I have it too, because like, I don't have all the answers. I'm not going to talk to you like Barack Obama and pretend, or George Bush and pretend that I know how to solve every problem, because I'd just be a liar or insane if I talk that way. Change, I think, or really like positive change requires some humility to say that you don't know how to solve every problem. And I don't have all the answers. But I know that you can educate kids cheaper than $13,000 a year when they're 6 and 7. You know, that's...
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, what are your thoughts on huge corporations having millions of dollars of tax
credits? I'm against it. I'm totally against it. How could you be for that? It's not so much against being against tax breaks. I'm against them getting handouts, which is just welfare for the people who need it least.
Right.
Like GE pays
exactly.
No taxes
and
get $4 billion in government subsidies in a year.
And they want their workers to pay salary and benefit decreases.
Right. So when we have this gun of government force, like being able to, we're this group of people that can take money away from people like you and me and use it to help people, for the children, for the future, for the families, for the workers, it winds up decorating the offices of the CEOs at GE and AIG and Goldman Sachs, because that's how any coercive system
works.
That's how any coercive system works. The most powerful people are always going to wind up with all the benefits, and it's just going to collapse on the people who depend on it the most.
Well, and that's my thought on privatizing education. The only the people who can afford it will get it.
Well, corporations are not, like, we're not, like, Tea Party people, or even conservatives. at all. So, like, turning the country over to corporations would just be insane. And corporations, as they exist today, should never exist. They're a monstrous creation of the government. I mean, like, corporations is like a legal...
fiction.
Legal fiction. In a file folder somewhere that says, this business can shield itself from accountability. So it's like an imaginary thing that allows a business to behave like a government. Where they say, hey, sorry, things didn't work out, but we're going to take your money. And that's unnatural. And that's not how business works. That's not how a free market would work at all. So we're, you know, as much as I am against the, you know, the public sector unions, I would be that equally opposed to corporations.
So you're fine with me not having health care?
Are you fine with me not having health care?
No.
Why? Well, I mean, it would be great to have health care, but, I mean, I work for myself, so if I can't afford it, I mean, should health care be free?
No, I pay for it.
Yeah, so if you should always be able to have it if you pay for it.
Yes.
Why would you, how would you lose it?
Because without... Without collective bargaining, my school board doesn't want my children to have it, unless I pay for it privately, and I'm barely making it now.
So this is kind of like the perils of being brought into this thing with these promises, and you know, the promises that you're going to get all of these goodies. I mean, they're not even really goodies. They're like they're things that you depend on. They're things that you depend on because you're children.
They're essentials. Like
right.
Everybody needs healthcare.
Right. I think everybody does.
I'm not saying free. It needs to be affordable.
Okay, so you know, the question that I would ask is, why is it so damn expensive?
Corporations.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Why would a business want to price everybody out of their service? I mean, it's like, think about any service that people need. Imagine the business in a meeting where people say, let's make it so expensive that nobody can afford it. That would be hilarious. You would just go out of business. So, I mean, the healthcare situation is complicated, but
I have a lobbyists... coworker who was paying $1,200 a month before she got a job by her business. $1,200 a month for her husband and her children.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's okay with you?
I'm doing my best.
You're quite fortunate.
But it would be great to have health coverage, but it's not anybody else's responsibility to pay for it. You know, it's not my health is nobody else. My health is not anyone else's responsibility. You know.
No, I didn't say it was.
So, where's the money coming from? I mean, do I want you to have health care? Do I want your children to have health care? Of course. I wish health care was affordable for everybody. But it's not because that system is just as screwed up as mm-hmm. the education system is.
Yeah.
But I hope, what I really would like to see is like people who do all this finger pointing and blaming their political enemies would start to see why these systems are so messed up. And, I mean, health care is complicated, but do you know who the AMA is? I mean, this how much more time do you have? Because this could be like a whole other half hour.
Yeah, not. I really need to get going.
All right, but why don't we agree that we both care about the education of young people? Trust me, I do.
I agree that you think it's important. I feel that we disagree on every child being able to be educated, having the opportunity to be educated. I think you think it's for the elite and those who can afford it, and those who cannot, well, that's tough luck.
The only other thing I would say is that I feel like... people who make this right to education argument paint this picture. I'm not saying you're doing it, but I'm just saying this is my feeling. Like, kids are these lumps of clay that just sit there inanimate until the school system comes and lights them up and makes them want... like, kids want to learn. How old's your youngest?
13.
Really? So you remember when they were little. Why? How? Why? Right? Kids, all the things we need to learn are already inside us. It's not like we sit there like useless dolts until we go into the school. Like, I would say that's where, in many ways, the learning slows down the most.
So people who don't go to school at all,
mm-hmm.
do you think they're going to be able to walk into a company and be able to perform at, you know, the same rate as people who are teaching?
Not if their job is to sit still all day and follow directions.
How are they going to learn tricking?
People, the same way a lot of the kids that I've worked with were homeschooled learning to read. They were interested in stuff, and they were motivated to learn how to read. They didn't learn how to read because somebody said they had to when they were five.
Did someone work with them? I mean, how can a five-year-old look at a letter, C, and know that it makes the sound without direct instruction?
Well, they need mentors. I'm not saying that, but all the tools that we need to learn are already inside us, like curiosity, the creativity, the imagination. It's not something magical that is like goes into these kids when they enter public school.
They need to learn how to access it and how to utilize it. That's not innate. I believe the curiosity is innate.
Magnitude of powers like 10 times.
But I think they need to acquire the skills on how to use it.
So how are people smart before public school? Ben Franklin never went to school. George Washington never went to school. So, like, how did, and these guys, we agree in our, you know, folklore that they were smart. So, how did so many people accomplish so much if this system has only existed in this country for like 120 years? This is like a new thing.
Somebody mentored them.
Right. And I think people always will. But it's not.
I think you misguided them. I have lots of children.
I am not the first person who said that.
I believe it. I work with children that I can't even get papers back from their parents because their parents can't read.
Right. They can't read or they're bilingual.
They can't read.
I've worked with kids who were the English as a second language.
I'm not talking about children who have English as a second language.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about children. That's probably parents can't read.
Yeah, where they go to school.
I don't know. They couldn't read.
But you agree that this system was in place for them, too, and they were forced into it when they were six, and now they're adults who can't read. So
no, I believe they probably had parents that didn't have them go to school.
You believe that, but we don't know. We're kind of speculating now, right? But, like, the system that they could have gone into when they were six existed, and for some reason, like, we have adults today. Good school too here in New Hampshire on the seacoast, Exeter.
And you're not thankful for that education?
Yeah, you're thankful to who?
Latin America, they used to borrow all this money from Europe.
It took me like 10 years to unlearn all of the. I mean, first of all, let's see, what do we remember when we graduate? Reading, writing, addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, right? And the rest of it's pretty much just a fog for most people. And then we learn everything that's really important that we need for the real world on our own. And we also have to unlearn all of the mythology about the country's history, you know, that makes people supporting things like war possible. Right? So there's more unschooling that needs to be done after school than I would say school is actually even useful. And I mean, you're doing the right thing, I think, based on, you know, you want to help people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you go and you probably do that every day. It's like, you're not the system. And most of the people in that system are, you know, motivated by good intentions. But what I disagree with is the system. I'm not attacking teachers. I know I've talked to Europe for like almost a half an hour.
You're not attacking teachers, but they're teaching you all the wrong things.
I would say, well, what do they know? I mean, a lot of them went to public school too. So if they don't go back,
I
and undo.
I actually went to private school.
Okay, so do you recognize that, like, most of a high school curriculum for a class like history is complete nonsense?
This is what's done. This is the economic.
That you would
between
think.
Between my private school or what I know of the public school?
What you know of the public school. Do black people really have civil rights because a guy named Lyndon Johnson signed a piece of paper? Or do they really have civil rights because of, like, grassroots movements of people with courage who got together and figured out how to organize? Because the history book hides all that, right? You think, like, oh, there was this huge problem, and usually problems in the history books are like, oh, you know what, there either wasn't enough government or people had too much freedom. The government comes in, and they solve the problem. All happens in one chapter. And this is why people, I think this is part of the reason, too, why people want such quick fixes to problems. They always think that politicians are going to fix their problems because every problem that we've ever had, but every problem that we've ever had in American history kept up in one chapter when somebody rides in on a white horse to solve the problem.
think the government can solve our problems.
Of course.
And I feel that my private high school education is quite similar to
public
school education, except I was limited. I did not have the options that public schools offer. I was trained. I think my private education was more restrictive than what's out there.
What kind was it? Religious? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a whole other set of problems. I don't want to get into that. But, yeah, you're right. If you went to a religious school, that's even more shielding. I mean, I don't know. How do you feel about it today? Do you still look at it as a positive experience? Or?
I'm glad I had the opportunity to go to high school, and I appreciate the education I had. I would have liked more opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
The school has grown, and there are more opportunities there now, but when I went, it was pretty restrictive.
So what is it, like, the curriculum is kind of narrowed to make you, like, continue to have whatever the religious beliefs or of the school are? Like, whatever...
It was college prep. I do have to leave, though.
Okay.